I declare this briefing session open at 6:30 PM this evening. The first item of business is declarations of interest. I have a declaration of interest from myself for item 12.9, list of payments made during the month of April 2024. It's an interest that may affect impartiality as I do part-time work for Thompson Gear, but I do not work on City of Joondalup matters there. Are there any other declarations of interest, councillors? If not, we proceed to the deputations section of the agenda. Deputation requests are made in writing and addressed to the Mayor. A time period of up to 15 minutes is set aside for each deputation this evening, and we have three of them. Deputations are not to exceed five people in number, and only three of those persons are at liberty to address elected members and to respond to questions that elected members may have. While we do allow up to 15 minutes, you are, of course, not required to use the full 15 minutes, and any extra time can be used for elected members to ask questions of you, if need be. It's important for people giving deputations to note that at a briefing session, if you give a deputation, you're also not able to make a statement. For our first deputation, on item 12.5, I call forward Mr. Joe Whittle, Judith Whittle and Greg Green of Kingsley.
Good evening, Mayor, councillors, staff and observers. John Whittle, Corinthian Court Village in Kingsley. My deputation is for the request for removal of development approval condition for the retention of the tulip tree at Corinthian Court Stage 3 development. In summary, our petition stated, remove the development approval condition for the retention of the tulip tree for Corinthian Court Stage 3, due to the health and safety issues being experienced by the residents of this retirement village. This tulip tree continually drops nuts and branches onto the access areas for senior citizen residents and visitors in Langley Circle. Many residents have age-related concerns, reduced vision, mobility issues and use mobility equipment. Walking on the nuts is extremely dangerous and could cause significant injury or death to any person accessing residences. I wish to express serious concerns regarding the health and safety risks posed by the tulip tree located in Corinthian Court development, specifically impacting the residents of Langley Circle in this village. All residents are senior citizens and are experiencing significant hazards due to the tree's continual shedding of nuts and branches. This issue is not merely a nuisance, it presents a substantial risk of injury, particularly considering the age-related concerns and physical limitations of our residents. Reduced vision, impaired mobility and reliance on mobility equipment are common amongst residents, making the treacherous conditions underfoot even more perilous. Walking on fallen nuts is exceedingly dangerous. The potential for slips and falls is high, and given the frailty of many residents, the consequences of such falls could be severe, resulting in significant injuries or even fatalities. Furthermore, the falling branches present an additional danger, threatening the safety of everyone in proximity. It is imperative that Council considers the well-being and safety of the residents as a priority. The retention of this tree under the current DAC places our vulnerable senior citizens at undue risk. We believe that the removal of this tree is not only justified but necessary to ensure a safe living environment for all residents and visitors. The WA Department of Education, in its report to Parliament in 2013, stated that the biggest issue with the tulip tree is its large size and the sheer weight of its limbs. It should be avoided in populated areas but may be used on the far side of ovals. The group forester of the Ludlow Forest Restoration Group in 2020 stated that tulips are not suitable as a street or garden suburban tree. Do not plant within 40 metres of buildings. Mature trees are prone to dropping limbs. They are best used as a paddock tree or in groups of trees for remedial planting. The Arbor West Tree Farm states that tulip trees are usually used as a street tree or large public outdoor space, such as in parks. It would therefore seem that the tulip tree in question should not have been retained in the development. The City's senior urban planner, in her letter to us dated the 6th of June, stated that a development application to modify the landscaping requirement is required. Her letter also prescribed the detailed conditions and forms and fees that must be completed and paid for to allow for this process to occur. This process for us seems to be complicated, as we're not seeking to change the landscaping, we're merely seeking to remove one tree, and if that happens, replace it with another that will not directly impact the health and safety of the vulnerable residents in our village. We respectfully request that the council reconsider the development application condition that mandates the retention of the Tuart tree. This action will significantly mitigate the health and safety risks currently faced by our community. I thank you for your attention and for your commitment to the safety and wellbeing of our residents.
Thank you. Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for your presentation. What size of tree are you thinking of replacing the Tuart with?
I have no expertise in trees. The operators of Corinthian Court Village have a landscaping and gardening contractor. We will be seeking advice from them as to what sort of tree needs to go in. It would also depend on what's left after the tree goes out as to what can go in.
Thank you for your deputation. Have you read and you read out the city's response to you, I think, from the 6th of June?
Yes.
Have you also read the response to the question received on notice?
Yes.
In tonight's agenda? So in that, what the officers are saying is, it's a you understand very well, it's a condition of development approval. Is it clear to you, sorry, that the council can't amend somebody else's development approval? The owner of that development needs to apply to amend their own development approval before we can consider it.
So it has to be the owner of the village that does that?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Thank you. For our next deputation, I call forward Michelle Kwok. Oh. Sorry, two others. No, please, do carry on. My apologies. No, you do have time. Thank you. Thank you, Director Perry.
That's okay.
My apologies. Please continue.
Good evening, Mayor and councillors and staff. My name's Judith Little, Corinthian Court Retirement Village, Kingsley, WA. I wish to draw your attention to the petition requesting the removal of the development approval condition for the retention of the Tuart tree in the Corinthian Court Stage 3 development. As President of the Corinthian Court Residents Association, I've been approached on numerous occasions by residents who are extremely concerned about their health and safety whilst walking under the Tuart tree, which is the only access to units and the walkway of Langley Circle, so we've got no other choice but to walk under there. The average age of the residency in our village is 81, with many people in their 90s. The tree continually drops nuts and branches onto the access areas into Langley Circle. These fallen nuts and branches pose a considerable risk for elderly residents and visitors, many of whom have got reduced vision and mobility issues. Furthermore, several residents rely on mobility equipment, making the uneven and hazardous surface created by the fallen debris even more dangerous. Walking on these nuts is just like trying to walk on marbles. They're extremely slippery and make access to our homes very difficult. There's been a number of incidents where residents have slipped or had the nuts caught under their feet or shoes. The potential consequences of walking on these hazards are dire and could result in severe injury or even death. It's extremely important for the mental health and well-being of all residents that they're encouraged to go out, to walk, to socialise, and to attend various activities both inside and outside the village. The government encourages aged people to remain as healthy and independent as possible and to live in their own homes, which should be safe and accessible. Many residents with mobility issues are very hesitant about accessing the area because of the risk associated with the falling nuts and branches. Unfortunately, this increases social isolation and impacts on mental health. If this was the only access to a workplace or site, it'd be shut down until the risk has been removed. But we can't remove the risk because of the mandate. Masonic Care operate Corinthian Court Retirement Village. They've frequently had residents express their concern about access and safety issues relating to the Tuart tree. Masonic Care have recognised the risk to residents and put up warning signs. Warning notices are important, but they do not alleviate the risk, and it is the only access for many residents. We've got no other choice. The CEO for Masonic Care WA sent a letter to the Mayor and to the councillors supporting the removal of the DA conditions for the retention of the tree. Our community values the environment and understands the importance of maintaining green spaces. However, the safety and the well-being of our residents must take precedence, and the current state of the tree presents an unacceptable level of risk. The city's urban planner sent us an email outlining the formal planning process, but we're not seeking to change the original landscaping plan. We're simply replacing one tree with another that's far more suitable and that doesn't pose the risks. This compromise would help to maintain the environmental balance whilst ensuring that the safety and the well-being of residents takes precedence. We request that the Council to act in reviewing and addressing the concerns raised in the petition. By doing so, the Council will demonstrate its commitment to the welfare of its residents and ensure a safer environment for all. Thank you for your attention, and we look forward to your favourable response.
Thank you, Mrs. Whittle. Councillors, are you happy to take any questions? But councillors?
Sure.
Councillors, any questions? Just one from myself. It's a bit unorthodox, but I think circumstances allow for it. Director Lee or Ms. Temple, if you can just quickly explain why the master plan's embedded in the DA conditions, and to change the master plan requires an amendment to the development approval. Director.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. I do appreciate the request that's being made, and on the surface it looks to just to replace one tree with another. The issue arises, or the need for a formal application arises, because as the Mayor alluded to, the retention of the existing tree is embedded into the approval. So the landscaping plan, and I appreciate that you're not looking to amend the landscaping plan, but the landscaping plan itself identifies that particular tree as being retained as part of the development. That landscaping plan gets wrapped up in the approval, and so it forms part of the formal suite of documents that the development is assessed against as to whether or not it meets its requirements going forward. And so for that reason, if you want to remove that tree, you would also need the approval to remove effectively it from the plans as well. And so that's why we're asking for a formal application to come forward, so we actually have the ability to formally consider the request.
Okay. And also too, I mean, that tree is within 4 metres of some villas. 4 metres. That's the trunk. That's not the canopy. So that should never have been allowed to go through in the first place. All the buildings around the tree, if you wanted to keep the tree, the buildings so close to the tree, I can't understand why they were ever allowed to be put there in the first place. Because there's 4 metres between the trunk, and I'm not talking the canopy goes over all of it, but I'm talking the trunk, 4 metres from the building. That's just ridiculous.
Thank you. So do you wish to also join in the deputation, or... thank you very much. Thank you for your deputation. For our next deputation, I call forward Ms. Michelle Kwok. And I just note I have another declaration of interest from Councillor Hamilton Prime just before you kick off, Ms. Kwok. It's in relation to item 12.3, Outcomes of Community Consultation, Expanding Horizons 2023 Economic Development Strategy and its interests that may affect impartiality. As Councillor Hamilton Prime, he's employed as a director in an aerospace company in the space sector. Thank you, Ms. Kwok.
Thank you. Okay. Michelle Kwok, 15 Crowflower Ocean Reef. Mayor, councillors, Kaya. I'm pleased to see positive changes in this plan that can directly benefit ratepayers. The aim of the plan, the climate change plan, is to achieve the 2 corporate targets. And we are on track with the emissions target. Let's have a closer look at them. Next again. Greenhouse gases. Wikipedia defines the top 5 greenhouse gases as water vapor, carbon dioxide, methane, nitrous oxide and ozone, it states that water vapor causes about half of the greenhouse gas effect, but humans are not directly adding to the amount, so it is not a driver of climate change. You can see the reference from NASA link, bless you, but it doesn't say that. It says that CO2 has such a major role on greenhouse effect. It makes intuitive sense that changes in its concentration because of human activity might significantly enhance the greenhouse effect. Next, please. We can see from the table, based on two studies, that water vapor and clouds accounting for 60 to 75% of the greenhouse gas. I noticed from US, UK and Australian government websites that not a word has mentioned water vapor having a greenhouse effect, as Wikipedia has stated that humans are not directly adding to its amount. This is in fact not my understanding. Next, please. Here's the equation of fuel combustion. You have fuel reacting with oxygen through ignition, and we get carbon dioxide, water, and heat energy. On the left, the fuel is methane from a gas stove. You get double the molecules of water vapor produced than carbon dioxide. Then we have petroleum in the form of octane. You also get slightly more water produced than carbon dioxide, as well as energy. Methane, octane, propane, butane, etc. are all hydrocarbons. Hydrogen from these hydrocarbon fossil fuel is where the water molecule comes from. On the right, we have wood. This is the traditional method to generate heat in a wood burner, wood stove, pizza oven for cooking and for warmth. We have the same three end products. Just to mention that coal is also a hydrocarbon, but it's mostly carbon, so burning coal will generate CO2 and not much water. The equation on the third line, C6H12O6, is the formula of glucose. This equation shows aerobic respiration. So we can all see that carbon dioxide, water, and energy are produced. If you keep fish, dogs, rabbits, chickens, bees, worms, all animals produce carbon dioxide, water, and energy from breathing and through human activities. Water and heat energy are more likely to cause warming from human activities and yet have been ignored. Next, please. I spoke about the reversal of that equation last time. It's called photosynthesis, where plants uptake carbon dioxide and water in the presence of sunlight to produce oxygen and carbohydrate for storage, energy use, and metabolism. Seaweeds, algae, plantains in the ocean do the same thing. And that's craggy bushland. Next, please. This is a simplified version of carbon cycle. Carbon, water are natural elements. They have their own cycles. I spoke about the importance of carbon sink, such as trees, soil microbes, and the ocean, in absorbing and moderating CO2 level. In the right is the emissions of greenhouse gas in various sectors, from electricity generation to transport to agriculture and waste. There's a lot of push to electrifying your home. What happens when there's a power cut? Next, please. So climate change is to do with rising CO2 level. This graph has 50,000 years unit on the bottom scale. It appears that the fluctuation of the red line is slightly ahead of the blue line. It means CO2 rises following rise in temperature and not the other way around. This needs more investigation. As we can see that it fluctuates throughout the ages, what caused the temperature to go up and down in the past, since human was not responsible, do we really think we can control the climate? In my opening statement last time, climate is always changing. We need to respond and adapt, rather than trying to come up with solutions that could end up worse than the problem itself. Next, please. CSIRO published this when Dr. Vanessa at Harvard shows that when CO2 increased, there's a 15% increase in plant production. 2.2 billion tons of carbon are taken up by plants each year. Bearing in mind, emissions is only 466 million tons a year. That's March 2023 figure. Next, please. Questions were directed to CEO of CSIRO by Senator Rennick. He asked if they have a set of accounting and measurement principles that climate change models use, and the same for emissions and offsets. The answer was there are variables and uncertainties that made it difficult to work with, and there are 40 climate change models. I think we have a lot of options there. Next, please. The Victorian government removed a policy directions paper saying up to 70% of farmland could be required for solar and wind farms if the offshore alternative is not used. Maybe farmers should think about keeping kangaroos instead of wasting prime land for Finland solar projects, as kangaroos do not generate methane. Next, please. We have seen how much environmental damage these so-called clean green energy projects have done to the landscape of Queensland last time. A quick recap, these wind turbines are death traps for bats and birds, including the iconic wedge-tailed eagles. They destroy pristine habitat for native fauna. The ridges of these mountains were blasted away to make roads up to 70 metres wide to transport and build these wind turbines. The blades are made of 60% fiberglass and 40% resin, which consist of large part of bisphenol A. 1 kilogram of bisphenol A can pollute 10 billion litres of water. The right bottom photo is from Iowa last month, when a tornado destroyed a lot of the wind turbines. Sadly, 5 people died and 35 were injured. It's not a good idea to build solar or wind farm in a tornado alley or in a cyclone area. That Chulalongkorn project is next to a World Heritage area, and glad to hear that it has been scrapped. Next, please. 109 wind projects are happening in Queensland as we speak. We have 20 in WA, 1 under construction, and 31 proposed. Next, please. 3,000 plus wind turbines are in the pipeline in Queensland, as well as millions of solar panels. Calliope from Solar Farm has 2 million panels alone. It's under construction, brought to you by Rio Tinto. Next, please. State Energy and Jobs Plan says 600,000 hectares of land is required for 10 gigawatt. We need to multiply that by 3 times, as wind turbine only generates energy 25 to 30% of the time. So 1.8 million hectares of land is needed. Elon Musk said to go all electric transport, we need to triple that number again. That will be over 500 pieces of land the size of the city of Joondalup. A huge environmental footprint indeed. Next, please. Like Shell, Total BP in Europe, Reg Australia have been both renewable and fossil fuel stations in Australia. They are one of the top 100 companies that paid zero tax after an income of $161 million. They are owned by a Thai company. The company runs the largest wind farm in WA, a 240-megawatt wind farm in Yandin, Dandaragan. And at this rate, our power bill will only keep going up. Next, please. The oil and gas industry in Scotland has shed 40% of their jobs over the last decade. That's around 50,000 jobs. That number gained by low carbon enterprises has only risen by 2,500 jobs. Next, please. This document is from offshore wind farm project in the US. It shows you the oil field and lubricant required for each wind turbine and substation. This is in addition to production, manufacturing, transport, and cost in dredging the seabed, laying cables, etc. Next, please. This is put together by 2 policy analysts and advisor in the US on viability of offshore wind projects. Their findings are local power system emission reduction will be small. Supply chain emissions will be large. global emissions will therefore increase, not decrease. The net carbon dioxide reduction efforts of offshore wind development are thus hugely negative and cannot justify further investment in this industry. Many existing local jobs will disappear as electricity costs replace fossil fuel costs and rise steadily, resulting in layoffs in many economic sectors and reduced spending by cash-strapped families. Next, please. This article was published in July 2013, Karenbine Community Center. Any building with passive solar design will reduce the energy bill significantly. Also, projects like this can be duplicated for suburbs that need a community center. So, next please. So the idea is to spend on tangible items that can save energy and water and will benefit our local community. If the government changes in the next federal election, then the greenhouse gas emission will be scrapped. I look forward for the draft climate change plan to go out for community consultation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kwok. Councillors, any questions? Thank you, Ms. Kwok. For our final deputation, Ms. Mary O'Byrne from Kinross.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Councillors, Mary O'Byrne, 123 Glencore Loop, Kinross. Thank you for allowing this deputation. So I'm talking about Elker Dog Park, and I have interviewed people at the site. I intended to use the photographs, but that's been disallowed, so some of the slides are missing.
Since you've referenced that, Ms. O'Byrne, I made a similar ruling at last month's meetings. If I have photos that identify residents and I don't know that we have permission of those residents, then I don't allow. I think you've made the statement. I'm just clarifying why the ruling, where we have a photo of residents and we identify residents, but we don't know if they've given permission, we won't be allowing them.
Mr. Mayor, it's not written information generally available to deputations. Can I start my deputation again?
From the start? Please proceed, Ms. O'Byrne.
The city's April 2019 report, which underpinned the establishment of Elker Dog Park, identified a risk that too confined a space for dogs to exercise in may lead to an increase in animal and owner conflicts due to a higher concentration of utilization within a smaller area. This risk is ever present in both the small and larger dog enclosures at Elker, as neither enclosure is large enough to meet the needs of either owners or animals. Also indicated the benefits of providing facilities for residents living in the city centre, where there are limited options for exercising dogs. But being the only dog park, it is attracting residents from all over the city, not just the city centre. This facility for the whole of Dunlop and the improvements in facility and sizes for both enclosures would absolutely, the costing for it would be absolutely minuscule when divided out across the whole body of Dunlop district ratepayers. Elker Park lighting, it's perfect for extending the hours the park is generally used. 2 8-millimeter light poles with LED luminaries within Elker Dog Park exercise area were provided recently, allocated from the 2022-2023 lighting program. So, Joondalup residents are now better placed to visit the site, socialise with their dogs until later on in the evening, but they will only do so if the park facilities are improved as they should be. The small enclosure is absolutely truncated in size. There are a number of trees just before the fencing going into the large dog enclosure, and it absolutely prevents the residents, and the pets can manage to get around, but the residents can't pick up after their animals and they can't walk around it. So if your idea is that you want people to be mobile within the park enclosure, then you have to extend it. Having really useful rather than just basic dog park facilities will increase the health and happiness of both pets and owners across the whole Joondalup district. A 2014 study published in Leisure Sciences, an interdisciplinary journal, likened pets to avatars in our interactive online games. The dogs help their owners navigate familiar conversations, participate in outdoor group activities, and meet new people. And it also went on to say effective dog parks help build social capital. Better facilities for both small and large dogs will build a dog-friendly neighbourhood, increase awareness in owners if their dogs have problems, and also increase their confidence in how much control they have over their pets. So basically, City of Joondalup has one dog park. It's very, very small, really. And we have two Tier 1 councils immediately to us. We've got Stirling and Wanneroo. Stirling has five dog parks, Mount Lawley, Careen, North Beach, Dianella and Balga. And Wanneroo has an absolutely wonderful dog park, Edward Griffiths Dog Park, Wanneroo, Heath Park, Eglinton, and another at Madley. Joondalup's single dog park has two enclosures, little and large. Both are undersized, too confined for easy walking around for the park users, and they're totally lacking in facilities for pet owners and animals. The lack of seating in comparison to the Wanneroo and Stirling facilities are noticeable, and in the interviews that I will have to read now, and I may not get through them all. People actually prefer the Wanneroo facilities. Could I please have next slide? This is the notice that's publicly available as you go into the park, and it does say that scheduled maintenance is twice a week at 10:30 and 12:00, and the facility is closed to the public during these times. And I hope that the city preserves this, because even with this in place, the contractors seem to have gone way out of sync, and they should be held accountable and penalised if they're underperforming. And the next slide, please, will show you why I think it that that's needed. This hole went on being present in the park for at least 3 weeks while I visited there in August 2023, when I then compiled the report, which went to the city on the 31st of August last year. That hole is 31 centimetres deep, and before I got involved, and the reason I got involved is local residents came and asked me after they had contacted the local councillors and got nowhere. Now, dog had a serious shoulder injury. I know that three people at least had fallen on the side, and one dog had a Giardia infection. Next slide, please. This sand on the pathway was at least 3 to 4 centimetres deep, and there were many more holes than I've shown. Next slide. I'm now going to read from Kim. He's a regular park user. And there's a lack of cover. Space is restricted both sides. The dogs like segregation, and it makes sense. Having both sides symmetrical for entry points, park gets overused, causing degradation of the lawn covering. Having larger areas enables the city to isolate worn areas for regrowth. Next slide, please. Okay, so I brought this cardboard box. It's just simply a demonstration of the size of the seating in use at Elkhart Dog Park. Some of the seating might be about 50 mils above this, but that's what people are sitting on. People who are old, there's no support for them to get up or to get down. The limestone blocks are unsealed, and if you look there, you can see, and this is in the small dog park, there's dog urine visible on them. This was wet on Saturday, and this lady, the smell around here was absolutely dreadful. The urine can come back up through the block. The dogs urinate on people, because dogs don't have direction finding when they're busy laying their scent. Dogs are a major reservoir for zoonotic infections. They transmit several viral and bacterial diseases to human. Zoonotic disease can be transmitted to human by aerosol production. By that I mean, if you flush your toilet at home and the lid isn't down, you get aerosol production. And basically, if you're using a communal site and everybody's flushing with the lid up, you're going to get everything and anything. And dogs are splashing people directly. Referencing the City of Joondalup Aging Plan 2022-23, it's predicted that the number of elderly residents, pensioners and seniors will grow significantly in Joondalup, with an additional 10,000 residents expected to reach the age of 65 every 5 years for the next 25 years. 3.3% of our older residents need help with everyday activities due to disability. Are they going to be locked out of community activities with their pets when the only dog park in our city has no provision for comfortable seating, aids, or for standing up or sitting down? Disabled residents may move no further than the easiest to reach seating, and that may be their only social activity in their day. Other park users are kind in lending assistance, and I did intend to show you Casey's comment from her personally. Casey has a serious disability. I come to the dog park every day. I find it very difficult to stand because I have a disability, which is curvature of the spine. The seating is inadequate for myself and for a lot of other disabled people. I have to have cushions to sit on. I have difficulty in standing. Sometimes people here have to help me stand up. I find there's a lot of dog urine around the seating that we sit on, which is not very good. Casey's independence is intruded on by the lack of provision of decent seating and shade. I did have a photograph of a group of people taking shade under the trees in the big dog enclosure on Sunday when I went down at about the 10 o'clock when we had a big downpour. There was no way they could stay in the dry. You basically can't see any faces, but they're all under the tree. They've got umbrellas and they went home soon afterwards. Emily, my problem with this dog park, we're always sitting on these limestone blocks, which are unsealed. They're wet. We bring in our own cushions to sit on them. Kingsway and Wanneroo dog parks have got bundled roof over the top of the table with big seats. Kingsway has got the same, so for the month, this park was closed. We were going to the Wanneroo and Kingsway ones. Far nicer to be in there. Hugh, the problem with this limestone wall seating. They're not sealed. They're porous. The dogs pee on them. You can smell the urine. It's not healthy and it's not pleasant. And on the small dog enclosures, Hugh says, the small dog enclosure can't be utilized properly because it's cut off towards the large dog section by a line of trees that users of the park can neither walk around nor pick up from their animals. There's a lack of flow and continuity. Small dog park should be extended too. And then Hugh, in case anybody's wondering whether or not I have permission from people, Hugh also wrote to me and said, we have two corgis and for 2 years we have frequented the Delcar Dog Park every Saturday and Sunday and for 2 days every Monday to Friday. During this time we made the following observations. On Saturdays and Sundays, peak usage time, the small dog population using the park is approximately twice that of the large dogs present. But the enthusiasm and energy levels exhibited by both types is exactly the same. A number of the small dog breeds are herding dogs like our corgis. They require the opportunity to run and exercise no less than the large dogs. The large dog area has large tracts of loaned area, approximately 80 to 90% of the total enclosure footprint. The small dog area has only one tract of lawn at the eastern end, and it occupies only about 50 to 60% of the total footprint. The remainder of the dog enclosure is taken up with mature trees, which large tracts of mulch underneath. Dog owners will know that although the dogs will relieve themselves in this mulched area under the trees, they will not run and exercise on it. Naturally, they prefer grass. Next slide, please. Edgar Griffiths Park in Wanneroo. It's absolutely fantastic site. It's so big that big dogs, small dogs that actually need to have a little break can go and have a rest in other parts of the... They can sit out. It's so absolutely wonderful. Wanneroo provides agility equipment, seating to promote community connection, wet weather cover for patrons. And on the smaller photograph to the left, you can see... You might not be able to see it, but there's actually a rake and a shovel. Now, there's a constant complaint that people don't pick up after the dogs or they don't repair the holes or whatever. But if you don't give them the equipment, then they can't use it. And it wouldn't be impossible to provide a caged area with extra dog bags and equipment that people could access. So it would be really good to let people be the adults that they want to be. I'm just going to ask the question.
Thank you, Ms. O'Byrne. Thank you for your deputation.
Thank you.
That concludes deputations. We now proceed to public question time. There's a set of procedures which relates to public question time, and I'll request that you follow my direction at all times. You'll have an opportunity to ask two questions. Your questions should be directed to the chair and asked in a polite and respectful manner. Furthermore, questions asked at a briefing session must relate to an item or a report listed in the briefing session agenda. I'd also ask that you would please state your name and address for the public record before asking your question. I call forward for our first question, Ms. Mary O'Byrne.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, councillors. Mary O'Byrne, 123 Glencore Loop, Kinross. Question one, are the seating arrangements at Elkhart Dog Park, why are they not being updated in accordance with the requirements of the disabled and access age-related ability plan?
Director Classen.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. As indicated in the report, the Elkhart Dog Park is designed as a walk-through facility. Where owners can actually walk and recreate with their dogs. There's also a responsibility on dog owners to ensure that the dogs are under effective control, irrespective if it's in a fenced dog exercise area. And the feedback we received when we originally designed that park led to design as it is, taking that into consideration.
Second question, Ms. O'Byrne.
Just a follow-on question, Mr. Mayor, to Director Classen.
Is this your second question?
Sorry, yep. My second question is, how is it acceptable for City of Joondalup residents to be seated on limestone blocks that are unsealed, filled with urine, and there's no facility to help the elderly get up or get down, when the city already knows that the lack of facility curtails elderly people and disabled
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The response to your question is similar to the response to the first question. The decision on how the park was designed was informed
by investigations to city officers at the time, and limestone blocks are used extensively throughout the city for seating arrangements around play spaces and in the dog facilities. So that was not believed at the time as an inappropriate solution.
I just
Thank
say
you.
Shame
Thank
on
you,
the city.
Ms. O'Byrne? No, Ms. O'Byrne, I ask you to apologise for that. You attend many council meetings. Do you know the rules of the
place? I apologise.
Thank you. Thank you. I have listed a number of residents who had sought to ask questions relating to a petition, so I'll be skipping those in the form here, but I've undertaken to give them priority at the council meeting for the matter that they wish to raise. So my next question goes to Linda Crawford.
Good evening, Mayor, Councillors. Linda Crawford, Goorong Road, Duncraig. My question is to seek some clarification from my written question. In the answer, they have stated that the Western Power owned street lighting that you would convert to LED would be within the 910 to 925 megahertz range, and it alludes to the fact that it's actually not a smart lighting. But if you actually look up on the internet, smart meter frequency is actually 900 megahertz to 2.4 gigahertz. So could I just have some clarification as to how that is actually different to smart lighting, please?
Director Clausen? Or Rebecca? Director Parry?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you very much for the question. I think we're going to have to take that one on notice and get back to you with a response.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to ask a question? If not, I declare public question time closed and we proceed to public statement time. There's a set of procedures which relates to public statement time, and I'll request that you follow my direction at all times. You're able to make a statement for up to 2 minutes, and the statement should be directed to the Chair and also be polite and respectful. No question or discussion will occur at the end of your statement, and as per the rules of briefing session, statements made at a briefing session must relate to a report listed in the briefing session agenda. I'd also ask that you please state your name and address for the public record before making your statement. And I call forward Ms. Linda Crawford.
Good evening again. Linda Crawford, Goorong Road, Duncraig. I'd like to take this opportunity to again urge you to reconsider your plans to look at purchasing Western Power streetlights and rolling out wireless LED street lamps. My primary concern is that I believe that more wireless connections may be detrimental to health. In November 2019, Western Power commenced smart streetlights at a trial in Melville, and they state that the technology in the streetlights uses very low-level frequency, exactly like our advanced meter smart metering technology. In an article in The Ecologist, Lynn Witcherly writes about the downside. They emit as many as 14,000 short bursts of intense microwave radiation a day, disrupting cellular electrochemistry and causing health symptoms from migraine to tinnitus, insomnia, dizziness, anxiety, chest pain, palpitations and memory loss. And now a growing number of electrosensitives have had enough. In addition, LED lighting has its own detrimental effects. Around the world, people are taking legal action as well as issuing notices of liability against those imposing wireless technology onto them. I believe that taking over the Western Power lights may open the city up to future litigation. According to the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, I quote, 5G is an energy hog, a lurking threat behind the promise of 5G, delivering up to 1,000 times as much data as today's networks, is that 5G could also consume up to 1,000 times as much energy. So it appears that the solution could actually be worse than the cure. I quote, there is no question in my mind that wireless radiation is not safe. We should not wait until we can count the bodies before we take steps to first of all research the hazards of something new and then secondly take steps to reduce exposure to humans. If by a smart city, do you mean that everything is done using RF fields? That's not smart. Professor David Carpenter.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. Does anybody else wish to make a statement? If not, I declare public statement time closed. Next item of business is apologies and leaves of absence. I have Councillor Jones and Councillor Raftus are both on a leave of absence this evening, and Councillor O'Neill and Councillor Fishwick are apologies as they are unwell. Are there any elected members requesting a leave of absence? If not, next item that you'll see is confirmation of minutes, which will be dealt with at the ordinary council meeting. Similarly, announcements by the presiding member without discussion and identification of matters. Announcements by the presiding member without discussion will also be dealt with at the council meeting. Identification of matters for which the meeting may be closed to the public. Item 12.12 may be closed to the public, but only if there are questions regarding the confidential attachment, councillors. So if anybody has any questions to the confidential attachment, not so much the report, please flag that and we can push that back and close the meeting accordingly when we get to that point. Next item of business is petitions. A 30-signature petition has been received from residents of the City of Joondalup requesting that all imminent parking works to Merrifield Place, Mullaloo, be halted and that community consultation be undertaken in regards to pedestrian, fire and car safety. Are there any other petitions, elected members? If not, submitted petitions will be received and checked for validity, and if valid, will come to the council meeting on the 25th of June. We now move to the reports section of the agenda. I'll just commence and work my way through. We do have presentations on item 12.3, economic development strategy, 12.7, draft climate change plan, and 12.8, organisational review of the city. But I will commence at the beginning. Item 12.1, development and subdivision applications. Are there any questions on this item, councillors? Item 12.2, execution of documents. Any questions on this item? Item 12.3, outcomes of community... Oh, sorry, Councillor Chester, execution of documents.
I will have a question on that item, thank you.
On item 12.3?
Yes.
Okay. Yep, no worries. Thank you, Councillor Chester. Item 12.3, outcomes of community consultation, draft expanding horizons, economic development strategy. Mr. Wilcock.
Thank you very much, through yourself. Thank you all for the opportunity to brief you on this paper. There's some probably key points worth covering. It's worth identifying that the intention of economic development strategy is to guide the city's approach to supporting and growing the local economy. And the reason we seek a strong economy is because it helps businesses grow, which is provides jobs for our residents, it provides the services for our community to use, and it also supports what is currently 20% of the rates for the City of Joondalup. And seeking and supporting new industries and growing these existing industries is important, as these industries underpin that percentage of rate base, which is the most likely area to provide an increase for our city to ensure a sustainable future. Our current economic development strategy was drafted in 2012, and like all plans and strategies, they need to be reviewed. The review of this began about a year ago with significant business surveys and reviewing the existing strategy and doing a great deal of technical research. Significant engagement has already been undertaken, including business and community workshops, significant engagement with our youth, regular input and advice from our city's joint economic development initiative, which contains the majority of the city's key stakeholders, 3 engagement sessions with elected members, and, of course, the most recent public consultation. In relation to that most recent public consultation approved by Council in February 2024, we received 38 responses, which, combined with the hundreds of levels of engagement points described above, resulted in significant feedback which has guided this final document. The recent public consultation identified some key themes, including positive alignment with the identified priorities, suggested increase in the focus on innovation, and improvements to the measurements of success. These improvements were certainly well received, and they've been made to the document presented to Council in the final version of Expanding Horizons 2033 Economic Development Strategy. I'm happy to take any questions on that.
Thank you, Mr. Wilcock. Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Ware. Yeah. Look, I'm looking now at attachment page 16, and I suspect the city officers may have been somewhat disappointed with the response, particularly from resident and ratepayers groups. I wonder how we could have improved that, or whether they have any notion of why the response was so poor. Thank you.
Mr. Wilcock? Thank you, and through the Mayor. While the response rate of 38 seems like a low number, when we run public consultation processes after a significant engagement process, we find that a lot of the people who are identified in this list had actually been consulted or engaged as part of the actual development. So the response of 38 is actually a relatively good number. You see at some of the other documents we provide, we get lower numbers than that. And the reason you do get lower numbers when you have these significant documents is, as I said, we were... I did do a quick count, and the touch points for a lot of these groups was actually in excess of over 600 people we've spoken to in the lead-up. So I guess this was just the final... We're just capturing the final group of people who hadn't been captured in that large group. So while it says 38, I actually count that as something closer to 638, Councillor. Thank you.
I'm pleased that you perceive it that way. Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you. Item 12.4, status of council decisions, April 2024. Any questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. I just have a question for page 138. This is writing to the relevant ministers in relation to the council supporting the findings from the Joint Standing Committee for the CCC report. When do we expect that we will be writing to the relevant ministers, given that's now 2 months from the decision that was made?
Director Perry. Mr. CEO.
Thank you, through you, Presiding Member, Councillor Kingston. May I take that on notice, and I'll get a response before the end of the week.
Thank you. Further questions? Councillor Hutton.
Just from page 138, slash 9 of the report, notice of motion, speed limit along Marmion Avenue. I just noticed in the actions, we've obviously written a letter, and it states, it lists the members of parliament that the letter has been written to. I just wanted to check, has the letter also been written to Main Roads WA as per the motion, because it was not mentioned in the comment?
Mr. CEO.
Thank you, through you, Presiding Member, Councillor Hutton. My understanding is the answer to that is yes.
Okay. And then just checking that this is still accurate, that it says no responses have yet been received from elected members. Is that correct?
Certainly as far as I have seen, Mr. CEO. Director Klassen.
Mr. Mayor, yes, as far as I'm aware of, we haven't seen anything, but we can follow up, and if there's an update provided in the back, in the briefing back.
And I guess just to follow on from that, would no responses having been received extend to there hasn't actually been any acknowledgement received that the letter has been sent?
I mean, from my office, we might need to take that on notice because we may have just received an acknowledgement of receipt email. They wouldn't generally be run across me. I know, to the best of my recollection, I haven't received any formal response. We might have received one of those automated notifications. I'd have to check on that.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Director Klassen?
Same on the city side, Mr. Mayor. Through you, we will, again, provide an update in the pack if we received an acknowledgement.
Yeah, thank you. And just in regards to the letter itself, would elected members be able to be provided with a copy of the letter that was sent?
Yes, certainly.
Thank you.
Any further questions, councillors? Item 12.5, status of petitions. Are there any questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Yes, thank you. It's in relation to the petition relating to the deputants tonight in relation to the removal of the tree at the Corinthian Retirement Village. Have we considered sending the correspondence which we've received from the residents of the petition to the landowner if we have their residential address?
Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. we have been contacted by the landowner in the past as to this particular tree and the process involved to have it removed. We haven't in this particular instance where we've just recently received a petition from the residents, but we're certainly happy to do that as well and make them aware of the engagement that we're having with the residents.
Further questions?
Yep. If we could, yes, undertake that action or at least give some thought to it, even if a good response could be provided this week, if that's something that can be undertaken or can be considered, or if there's any obstacles to it.
Director?
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, happy to do that, and I'm fairly comfortable and confident to say that we're able to. It doesn't cause me any concern to write to them to make them aware of it. It's on the public record, so that's fine.
Councillor Hutton?
Yeah, just a quick question. In regards to the petition on the childcare centre in Burns Beach, I just obviously note the comment effectively explains that this isn't in the direct control of the city. I'm wondering if that has been communicated to the petitioners, and I guess all of the petitioners.
Director?
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. We may not have advised every single signatory to the petition, but I am aware we have contacted the lead petitioner to let them know that the agenda for the DAP meeting is now available. That happened earlier today. So earlier this evening, the Manager of Planning Services and I were discussing the need to potentially update our reporters at the time of writing. We weren't aware when the date was going to be set, but that has been set now. But to your question, the lead petitioner is aware that it is a matter for the DAP and not council.
Councillor Hutton?
And just a follow-up question. This is from my understanding. Would that advice have also been provided to the local residents association, given their interest in the topic?
Director Lee?
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. The local residents association would have been notified if they made a submission through the consultation process on the application. I'm not sure off the top of my head if they did or not, but certainly if they did make a submission, we would have let them know along with all the other submitters.
Thank you. Further questions? If not, we go to the annual review of the corporate business plan. Any questions on this item? Item 12.7, Draft Climate Change Plan, Ms. Macario.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor and Councillors, the purpose of this report is for Council to endorse the release of the Draft Climate Change Plan for community consultation. Recent amendments to the Local Government Act, Section 3.1, provide that a general performance function of a local government is that it must have regard to the need to plan for mitigating risks associated with climate change and in making decisions to consider potential long-term consequences and impacts on future generations. The City's Draft Climate Change Plan takes into account this overarching legislative function and is intended to provide direction for the City's climate change mitigation and adaptation activities over the next decade. The Draft Climate Change Plan was first presented to the November 2023 Council meeting, where it was resolved that further engagement be undertaken with elected members on the proposed corporate emission targets within the draft plan. Feedback has been sought from elected members and a revised draft reflecting this feedback has been finalised. The emission targets proposed have been established to align with the state government emissions objectives, being an economy-wide target of net zero emissions by 2050 and setting a target for reducing emissions from state government operations of 80% below 2020 levels by 2023. Therefore, the city's plan proposes including corporate targets to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 80% below 21-22 emissions by 2030-31, and a second target to achieve net zero emissions by 2050. The plan also includes a community mitigation target to implement a minimum of 2 community initiatives per year. The plan covers 5 key focus areas and importantly includes a number of overarching mitigation and adaptation objectives to guide implementation of the plan. In developing the plan, the City conducted a review of its energy use and emissions profile assessed the risk posed to the city from climate change and developed a range of climate change projects for each of the key focus areas. The majority of the city's emissions come from electricity in buildings, followed by Western Power-owned street lighting, which are key focus areas for actions within the plan. The community was also invited to participate in a climate change survey, and a strategic community reference group meeting was also conducted. The responses were used to inform the development of the draft plan, with many respondents stating that climate change is extremely important to them, that the city should consider setting an ambitious emissions reduction target, and that the city should demonstrate leadership and action in climate change mitigation and adaptation. Page 41 of the agenda provides a snapshot of the financial implications of the plan, which in summary provides that the total estimated costs for new and existing projects over the 11-year period is $25.43 million, and this includes $7.4 million already allocated to the Leafy City Program and Winter Tree Planting Program. The total estimated budget required for new projects over the 11-year period is $16.27 million, which is the equivalent to $1.47 million annually. The new costs relate to the proposed implementation of the transfer of ownership of Western Power-owned street lighting to the city and the upgrade to LED. This is $10.6 million, and savings are estimated at over 3,000 tonnes of CO2 equivalent annually. For this project, the projected payback period is estimated at 8 years. After 25 years, there would be an estimated overall benefit compared to the status quo of $39 million. Upgrading city-owned street lighting is another project, which would also save an estimated 97 tonnes of CO2 equivalent annually at a cost of around $2 million. Purchasing renewable energy through the power purchase agreement for the city's contestable energy supply would be $3.3 million and would save over 4,500 tonnes of CO2 equivalent annually. It is anticipated that the costs associated with these projects in the draft plan, such as the purchase of renewable energy, will be offset by the savings made in other projects within the draft plan, such as the Western Power street lighting project, which will have significant long-term savings for the city. In December 2021, Council resolved that it supports the preference that all streetlights throughout the city be smart-metered LED city-owned streetlights, and this project aligns with that resolution. Estimated savings for corporate emissions from proposed projects are over 9,000 tonnes of CO2 equivalent annually, which is approximately 69% of corporate emissions. However, it is important to note that the scope of some projects is still to be confirmed, and not all costs or emission savings have been able to be quantified at this time. They are our best estimates at this time. The intent is that Council agrees to release the draft plan for community consultation to gauge community sentiment of the plan and its objectives, and following the community consultation period, a final draft plan will be presented for Council for adoption. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillors, Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. With regard to recommendation 4, I'm wondering what the city officers were thinking when they decided to undertake direct action by planting trees rather than buying carbon offsets.
Ms. McCurry.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. The decision to amend the project regarding purchasing of offsets to offset city fleet emissions was a result of direct feedback that we received from elected members regarding the use of offsets and the preference for tree planting in local areas as opposed to purchasing the offsets.
Councillor Jessen.
An initiative I agree with, incidentally.
Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. Look, I appreciate the changes that have been made. I've just got some questions, though, about the what's stated here as purchasing renewable energy through the power purchase agreement. Do you think the administration could walk me through how we're purchasing renewable energy? So what is the process through the WA local government power purchase agreement and how that is renewable energy?
Director Klassen.
Through you, Mr. May, the latest WALGA contract was awarded to Synergy, and based on the Synergy contract, there is an option to purchase renewable energy through that contract, through WELGA. What it's called, and I'll just read some of the comments here, as provided previously as well, the current arrangement for the renewable energy component is to supply a contract to members classified under the name large-scale generation certificates, which is from an existing assets. The accredited renewable power generation assets produce LGC, so the large-scale generation certificates, which is then purchased by Synergy. So what we purchasing is the green energy, and then provide an incentive through that purchasing for green energy providers to generate more green energy. That is still a very competitive pricing for our contestable sites, which makes up about 40% of our city's total energy consumption. So in the first year of the contract, we had a a 0% year 2, 25% and 50% projected for year 3 from the green energy purchase contract. So that's just the rate you purchase, and that's specifically then generated by or purchased by Synergy from a green energy supplier to provide into the grid. It's not necessarily that you'll get the power from that point. Supply, it's provided into the grid. You still use the power out of the grid, but it provides the incentive for the generation of green energy. Hopefully that covers the question, Mr. Mayor.
Councillor Kingson?
Yes, I've been looking at the determination which was made by the ACCC in relation to the WA local government's market operations in relation to this. It doesn't seem to me that in the agenda here, I think we're using the same advice from the same wording from the WA Local Government Association, but it does seem to be what's actually occurring is that for the contestable power is that that's being purchased under a power purchasing agreement with Synergy, and then Synergy is not actually purchasing renewable electricity. What's actually being purchased is certificates equal to the megawatts that we then say that we're buying renewable electricity. It doesn't appear to me that we're actually purchasing renewable electricity, but we're actually purchasing the tradable substance.
Councillor, you're very much veering into debate.
I'm just trying to understand.
Short question, not a statement, please. What's the question?
Is that the case?
Director?
Sorry, for you, Mr. May. I'm not familiar with the document you're referring to, Councillor Kingston. What we have been provided by Synergy is that they purchase the large-scale generation certificates is generated by renewable power generation companies. So they purchase the large-scale certificates that enables those companies to produce the renewable energy. As I've indicated, we there's no way that we can say, well, the energy you're tapping off the grid is the energy that you purchase the green energy. It however, as I've indicated, provides the quality incentive to accredited renewable power generation companies to produce that accredited renewable energy for the grid that then gets pumped into the grid. That's as much as I can provide, Mr. Mee.
Yeah.
Further question, Councillor Kingston?
Yes, I'll move on from that point. Again, I was looking at the ACCC determination for the operations of the WELGA power project here that we just signed up to.
The director said he's not familiar with that document. Can you ask questions about the council's report, please?
Yes. It says that we've signed up to receive renewable energy as part of this WELGA program. And the WELGA program seems to indicate that in the future it might consider underwriting the new generation of renewable power, so underwriting the power plants themselves, and in a recent WELGA document suggesting even there's a future consideration of purchasing assets. Does the administration know much about this?
That's not related to the city's report, Councillor Kingston. We have North Metro's own WALGA meeting here next Thursday, I believe. More than welcome to attend and pose that question to WALGA at that event or at other events if you wish. Do you have a question relating to our report for Director Klassen?
Yes, that's all right then. Could I have access to three documents then? First, the Memorandum of Understanding for the City of Joondalup to enter into the power purchasing agreement with WALGA. Secondly, the contract with WALGA. And thirdly, the Beyond 25 strategy paper relating again to the power purchase agreement from WALGA, which is about the renewal of that contract in 2025 for a further 10 years, which has been, I believe, given to the city.
Well, at least one of those documents is not ours. I think we'll take that question on notice, Councillor Kingston.
Yeah.
I'll ask for a response to that question in the pack.
Yes, I'd appreciate that.
Further questions?
Yes, just on the point of the Beyond 2025, is that it seems that this...
I don't want a point on Beyond 2025 because that's not the city's document and this isn't a debating forum, Councillor Kingston.
Yeah, but this is the point that I have to make, is that that document talks about the contract...
I'm not asking for you to make a point, Councillor Kingston.
For 10 years.
Councillor Kingston, don't speak over the chair. This is a briefing session. I'm not asking you to make a point. I'm asking you to ask questions. I'm certainly not asking you to make a point about another organisation's document. Do you have questions of the council's report?
Yes, lastly, who represents this city to WALGA in the capacity for this particular contract with WALGA?
Mr. CEO?
Well, ultimately, as with most, if not all, things to do with the city, it's the CEO. The day-to-day would be under the supervision of the Director of Infrastructure Services. And
thank you.
Just lastly,
Councillor.
Thank you. It just comes up to the renewal of this contract because the power purchase agreement ends in 2025, the current one that we have. And then there's been a consideration for a 10-year term after that. Will that be signed under the delegated authority or will that be presented to the council?
Mr. CEO?
At this point, thank you, Presiding Member, Councillor Kingston, through you. At this point, if the delegated authority is available to the CEO, then I imagine that would be the normal course of action that would be taken. I recall that with the existing contract that was signed under my delegated authority.
Thank you. Further questions? Councillor Hassan?
Yeah, thank you. Just a few quick questions. The first question is in regards to the Local Government Act, Section 3.1. As mentioned in the report, it states there's a need to plan for and plan for mitigating risks. I'm wondering if that's prescriptive in how we must make that plan or whether or not it's open to our interpretation about how we might address the perceived challenges.
Ms. Macario?
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. No, it's not prescribed. The city just needs to take those items into consideration in terms of our planning and our actions towards managing climate change impacts.
Yeah, thank you. So then just following on from this again, this is just for my complete understanding. Does that therefore mean it is up to council itself to determine whether or not we feel on each individual issue that there's a need for us to take a stance on climate change? Is it up to the council itself to basically determine whether or not it deems it to be a serious enough challenges that we're facing?
Ms. Macario?
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. As I mentioned, it is within the Local Government Act that the city considers the impacts of climate change. Exactly how we do that is up to council, which is why the climate change plan comes to council for endorsement.
Yeah, no, thank you. Just to follow on from that, there's obviously mention in the report to the state targets I just wanted to check, are we in any way as local government bound to these state targets?
Ms. McCurry?
Thank you. Through Mr. Mayor, no, there's no statutory requirement for us to align with those state targets. We are just proposing we do so, so that we do have that alignment to the action being taken by the state.
Yeah. And then just for complete clarity, if I may, is a draft climate change plan required?
Ms. Fakari.
Thank you, through Mr. Mayor. The climate change plan itself is the instrument that we're proposing to use to meet the requirement in the Local Government Act. I think it would be quite difficult for us to have a strategic approach to managing climate change into the future without a strategic plan in place.
Yeah, no, and thank you. I just wanted to be super clear. When it comes to the $3.3 million for purchasing renewable energy, do we have a definition on renewable energy?
Ms. McCurry or the rest? Ms. McCurry.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. We can provide a definition based on the renewable energy in regard to the action that we're proposing. We can provide that in the pack.
Yeah, and just to follow on from that, if I may, obviously just fearing being too prescriptive and ruling out options, do we know if renewable energy would include nuclear energy if that was economically efficient?
Ms. McCurry?
Through Mr. Mayor, it's not something that we have proposed in the current climate change plan, but if that's something that Council wanted us to consider, we would investigate that.
I don't think that was the question. I very much don't think that was the question. I think the question was, in answering, and I think you've taken that part on notice, the question about what would meet the definition of renewable energy, whether nuclear power would come under that definition or not. But I think you'll have to provide that information further. If I might add some context to that, I mean, waste to energy, for example, is renewable to a percentage, but not entirely renewable. Well, that's my recollection of it as well. So there's percentage weightings, I think, but I'll leave that to Ms. McCurry. Ms. McCurry?
Just for clarity, Mr. Mayor, the definition of renewable energy is related to the project that we're proposing. Is that what you would like?
Councillor Hunt.
I suppose, as the Mayor alluded to, my question was whether or not alternate forms of energy such as nuclear would be covered. Obviously, the Mayor has also mentioned waste to energy, which obviously can be classified as renewable energy, however, does provide potentially emissions, depending on how you store and capture. So, yeah, I just want to make sure the definition of renewable energy is wide and flexible so that all options are explored. So I guess my question is around, do we have a definition and would nuclear be included? I'm just curious. Just to follow on with the renewable energy question, given there is a push with government and industry to decarbonise our grid, why do we as a city feel it's necessary to be prescriptive 10 years into the future around selecting renewable energy instead of leaving up to state and federal government to make sure the entire grid is accessible with renewable energy at a cost competitive price?
Ms. McCurry?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Sorry, can I just seek some clarification in regard to the question?
Yes, apologies. I'll rephrase the question. Given we are constantly told that renewable energy is the most cheap and affordable form of energy, why does the city need to be prescriptive when, in the future, 10 years down the track, hypothetically, we would be picking renewable energy if it is the most economically efficient? Why do we have to be prescriptive, and why do we have to set aside so much funds for renewable energy, given we are told that it will be the most affordable and cheap form of energy?
Thank you, through Mr. Mayor. The current project that we're proposing in the draft climate change would be for a similar period to the current contract, so it would be around a 3-year period. So after that time, we would be able to look at other options and renegotiate if that was something that we wanted to do and there was other opportunities.
Yeah, thank you. And just one more question on this line. When it comes to renewable energy, sort of following up from Daniel, Councillor Kingston's question, apologies, have we investigated producing our own renewable energy as opposed to buying certificates slash credits through a mechanism?
Ms. Vicario.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. The city does currently produce an amount of renewable energy, so we have a number of solar PV systems on a number of city facilities and buildings where we are producing renewable energy. That is something that we can look at expanding into the future.
And sorry, just to clarify on that, if it were to become more efficient for the city to produce its own renewable energy and battery storage, as opposed to purchasing it, by agreeing to this plan, would we actually be locking ourselves into the least cost-effective option?
I do. Ms. Vicario.
Thank you, through Mr. Mayor. The amount of energy that we would be able to produce would still be classified as small scale, I think. I don't think we would be able to produce enough renewable energy to cover the requirements of all of the city's facilities and activities that we would require.
And sorry, just final question. Just in regards
to... It needs to be the final, Councillor Hutton, because I think you've said the final about four times and other councillors are waiting.
Sorry, the final on that line of questioning. This is a completely different line of questioning.
Can I give others a chance then if you have more questions?
Oh, I would just ask you this one question. Okay, Councillor Hutton. I'll be finished. Just in regard to the word mitigation included, is that word our definition of mitigation from an external source, or is that our own definition of mitigation listed on page 37?
Ms. Vicario.
Thank you, through Mr. Mayor. That is the definition that we've used in the current climate change strategy, and it is kind of a local government accepted definition for mitigation.
Thank you. Councillor Pizzi.
Thank you. I'd just like to thank the city for this, the work they've done in the draft climate change plan. And I congratulate, instead of offsetting carbon for the fleets, to plant trees locally instead. I just have a few questions. So the power purchase agreement costs about $500,000. The cost for the administrative buildings, I understand, is about $93,000, which is partially offset by of about $74,000 by avoided increased energy costs. How does the remainder of $400,000 of the PPA cover, and is there any financial offset?
Ms. McCurry.
Thank you, through Mr. Mayor. I would need to take that question on notice and have the financial information provided in the pack.
Right, thank you. The next question was, I'm going to ask this because it is kind of down the lines of some other questions that couldn't be answered, but I'll ask it and seek your advice. Under for the new power purchase agreement for 1st of April 2025, under which delegated authority does the CEO approve this power purchase plan?
Director Parry?
Mr. Mayor, if you're after a specific delegation, yes. I would have to take that one on notice. It's probably one of the financial delegations in relation to acceptance up to a particular amount within the municipal fund relating to contracts.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor?
Just a few more. Is the city concerned with agreeing to a power purchase agreement with the recent concerns over ineffective and possibly negative environmental impacts of the wind turbines, so we could possibly be damaging the environment rather than improving it by agreeing to the PPA?
Ms. McCurry.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The power purchase agreement and the energy that is provided through the wind farms, which is the source of the renewable energy under the current contract, is the Albany and the Colgar Wind Farm in the southeast of WA. The city, whilst we would of course be concerned with any environmental impacts, we don't actually have control over the way that they are run or managed. And I think it's a decision of council whether we want to continue to purchase renewable energy rather than continuing with fossil fuel based energy, which would be the alternative if we didn't want to purchase renewable energy.
Councillor?
Just a question on that. It's not really up to council though, is it? Because it's under delegated authority. We can't disagree to the power purchase agreement if it includes wind turbines because we don't agree to it. Is that correct?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, sorry for clarification, you're correct. The contract would be signed off by the CEO. However, we are seeking feedback from council, as we have done on previous occasions, regarding the climate change plan.
Thank you. Just two more questions. In relation to the carbon emissions targets in the draft climate change plan, the emission targets, does the city have a legal obligation to set the emission targets, which I think you've already answered, sorry, but could the city implement direct local climate mitigation policy and changes without the costly and possibly ineffective emission targets included?
So
would you like me to ask it?
No, I'm just trying to parrot. So you're saying, can the city implement its own mitigation strategy independent of any targets? Is that...
Independent of emission targets.
Ms. Vicario?
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. As I answered previously, there's no statutory requirement for the city to set emission reduction targets. We would do so because we would like to provide leadership to the community and also because we have sought feedback from the community, and a large proportion of the community that responded requested that the city consider ambitious targets for this plan.
Councillor?
Sorry, what was the exact percentage that requested specifically emission targets, if you could remind me, sorry.
Ms. Macario?
So 66% of the respondents wanted an ambitious target within the draft climate change plan. Okay.
So costs annually of the draft climate change plan, my understanding was at $2.3 million annually, not $1.7 million. I appreciate the future savings if the ambitious targets of replacing the LED lights and other projects are achieved. And I do appreciate being able to affect our local environment and changes that benefit locally. But the estimated $2.3 million a year that it will cost ratepayers to reach emission targets of net zero, would this have any effect on reducing global and or local climate change? And I want to be specific in my question that I'm not talking about that I'm not talking about changes that have tangible benefits in the city of Joondalup. I'm asking in regards specifically paying off setting emissions through the power purchase agreement.
Ms. Macario?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I'm sorry, I just need to seek some clarification on the question.
Councillor?
The question is, having setting emission targets and achieving them via power purchase agreements costs a considerable amount of money. And do you think that that has a tangible benefit in our local environment here in the city of Joondalup when we could do things specifically here and not be paying somewhere else?
Just to clarify, I don't believe we can meet our emissions target on the power purchase agreement in any event.
It is part of it, though.
It's a part of it, but it's not the major part.
Yeah, so like I said, I think part
just,
of my... Yeah.
Please don't speak over.
Sorry.
So that's where I'm trying to sort of... So if I take your question as, if the council meets its emissions targets, what will be the impact? Or if the question is specifically related to the power purchase agreement, that the major part of meeting the targets would be an LED streetlight conversion, not the power purchase agreement. So... There's sort of two elements there. Is your question Is your question, what is the Englobo impact if the city meets its emissions targets back on the residents of Joondalup, which is the way I first interpreted it?
Yeah.
Or is there? Are you asking another question there?
Yeah, no, that wasn't the question. So I appreciate that the LED lighting and projects like that will have benefit economically and environmentally here in the city of Joondalup. And I appreciate those kind of projects where they're physically tangible,
I'm helping the environment here. Not trying to debate, I'm just trying to get clarification. What's, if I may, Councillor Pizzi?
So I understand.
Could you ask the question again, please?
So the power purchase agreement that we could enter into in the 1st of April and the one that we have now, how does that physically change the temperatures here in the city of Joondalup or mitigate our physical environment here in the city of Joondalup?
Ms. Vicario.
Thank you, through Mr. Mayor. As we provided previously, there's a similar question that's been asked. The city doesn't have resources to monitor environmental changes at the local level where we would be able to report tangible benefits. However, every local government's action to reduce emissions has a cumulative effect to address climate change, and the city can lead by example to the community. So initiatives such as purchasing renewable energy do set an example to the community, and the city would be leading by example. I think I should just clarify that the power purchase agreement isn't just about renewable energy. It's about the city bundling all of its energy requirements, and there is a significant saving to the city by being part of that contract.
Councillor?
Just a question on that. So I think that part of your response will be answered in the question taken on notice at the beginning of the remainder $400,000, how was that partially offset? Because we know that the $93,000 in the administrative building is offset by savings of about $74,000 to avoided increased energy costs. Well, can you tell us the monetary benefit then of that offset?
Ms. McGarry.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I will work with officers so that we can actually quantify the total amount of the contract. For the renewable and non-renewable components, it may take a little bit of time to get that information, but we will try to quantify the entire contract for you.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Councillor May.
Thank you. Just two quick ones from me. On stamp page 317 or page 31 of the report, the largest greenhouse gas, source of greenhouse gas emissions is from the city's electricity, which would be mostly comes from the grid, obviously, which is powered mostly by the Collie coal fire power plant as well as the gas power plant we have up north somewhere. Would that percentage naturally decrease over time with more renewables coming into the grid from the big battery they're building in Kwinana right now and whatever the state government's plans are with solar and wind?
Ms. McCurry.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. The way that we have currently quantified the emissions profile is based on the way that we currently use energy and purchase electricity. So if we were to move towards more renewable energy sources, then yes, that makeup would change.
Thank you. And just out of curiosity, electricity in buildings, does the city know what buildings in particular, probably, I'm assuming the building we're in next door, but consume the most electricity? And second to that question, I'm not aware of this building or next door necessarily having solar panels or batteries to create more renewables going into the city's power consumption. I can repeat my question if needed.
Did you get the question there, Ms. McCarthy?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, are you asking whether we know where the largest users of electricity?
Yeah, as in terms of buildings, I mean, if there are any that stand out in terms of being big consumers, my guess is this building, Craigie Leisure Centre.
Just the question, because it's
What was the question again, please, Councillor Mann?
Sorry, do we know what buildings contribute the most towards the 46% of our greenhouse gas emissions?
Ms. McCurry.
Thank you, through Mr. Mayor. Yes, we have that information. I can provide it in the pack.
Thank you. It's mostly out of curiosity. And the last question I have is, as part of this plan, would the city look at investing in panels, solar panels, and where cost-effective batteries in order to further reduce the electricity consumption coming from fossil fuels?
Ms. McCurry?
Thank you, through Mr. Mayor. Yes, that is something that we're already currently doing, and it's proposed that we continue to do that. There is a proposed project in the draft plan that looks at those items.
Right, thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thanks, through you, Mr. Mayor. I just recall a conversation earlier in this session about the emissions targets, so I thought it would be good to ask a question. During the previous term of council, my recollection is that council was invited to offer opinions as to whether we should be aiming to meet state and federal government targets or to aim higher or to aim lower. So I think that, in fairness, the actual decision to meet or to aim to meet the state and federal targets was the consensus of the previous council. My question is if the administration can confirm that. Thank you.
Ms. McCurry.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, that's correct. We did have a strategy session where we discussed that prior to the development of the new climate change plan. However, we also did go back to elected members recently following the decision of the November Council to discuss the emissions reduction targets and seek feedback from elected members at that meeting also.
Further questions? Councillor Hutton.
This is genuinely my final question. Has the city considered allowing residents to offset their share of city emissions at rate time, similar to how you would do with Qantas and booking a flight?
I don't believe we have. Director Humphrey?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, no, we haven't at this point.
I'm not sure how we could even do that as a special charge, but
well, I'd love to find out if it was possible. That would be good to know.
Thank you, Councillor Hutton. Organisational review of the City of Joondalup. Director Parry. Thank you, Ms. McCurry.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor and Councillors, the purpose of this report is for Council to consider options on progressing an organisational review in accordance with the Council direction of August 2023 to engage an independent professional body to review the internal structures and efficiency of operations within the City's administration. Elected members will recall that a methodology for this project, project progressing was approved at the November 2023 Council meeting, whereby it was proposed an external consultant be engaged to prepare a request for tender document to advertise and appoint a consultancy to undertake the review, and at the February Council meeting a recommendation to appoint a consultant to develop the RFT was referred back to the CEO to develop further options. Whilst it's important to acknowledge that there are many benefits that may be gained from undertaking an organisational review and the programs the Council administration already have in place aimed at organisational improvement, which are highlighted on page 46 of the agenda, if there is to be an extensive review of the internal structures and efficiency of operations, a number of important considerations need to be taken into account as part of the project. And the first of those considerations relates to impartiality, objectivity and independence, which was one of the supporting reasons that accompanied the adopted notice of motion by the Council. And as detailed within the report, in order to develop that request for tender documentation, a detailed scope of works needs to be created, and creation of this scope of works requires someone to be able to facilitate and liaise with both elected members and the executive through a series of workshops to develop and refine the tender documentation to a level that meets the Council's objectives, which at this time are undefined. It's considered important that any persons who are involved in the facilitation of this work should be independent of the City, and independent facilitation will minimise the chance of any potential bias or conflicts of interest, strengthens the ability to offer a neutral at arm's length viewpoint, and avoids any internal politics or power imbalances that could potentially occur. The second consideration relates to professional knowledge and capability. In undertaking an organisational review of a large organisation like the city is a significant and complex undertaking that requires comprehensive scope of works, and that requires someone who possesses the knowledge, the qualifications and the expertise in organisational design and modelling of large organisations to develop that fit-for-purpose request for tender. The city doesn't possess those skills in-house, and as the city has done previously on occasions where it doesn't have those skills, it engages external expertise to assist it in developing suitable scopes of work. The suggested elements of a scope of works are detailed on page 48 of the agenda, and it's considered that in order to fulfil those requirements involves a high level of expertise. So an option to undertake this role internally using existing resources has been carefully considered and hasn't been proposed by the city due to them not having the necessary expertise in-house and the need for the administration to retain that high degree of separation and impartiality from the process. As an alternative, the city examined whether it might engage a person on a fixed-term contract to develop the request for tender. However, I think there are some obvious uncertainties with that option. Also, given the council may determine not to proceed with the project, there might be a risk of there being a low level of confidence in attracting suitable applicants if the contract may not be fulfilled for that time period. So it's considered that the preferred option, which meets the key requirements of objectivity and expertise, is for the council to endorse undertaking a request for a quotation exercise for a second time and considering its options following the receipt of quotations. A scope of works has therefore been developed based on a general interpretation of the scope of the council's resolution, which is also submitted to you for your endorsement with this proposed approach. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Questions, Councillor May.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you, the initial $60,000 to appoint a consultant to put a tender out for another consultant. I'm assuming that any organisational review, and I'm not asking for numbers, but would I be correct in assuming it would be orders of magnitude more expensive than the initial $60,000?
Director?
Three, Mr. Mayor. To develop the request for tender, you will recall that at the February Council meeting we put forward the quotations received. We'd only received three at that time, and they ranged from, I think, about $20,000 up to about $120,000. So I'm thinking that the work that might be required for this project is around the $20,000 to $30,000 mark, but that just depends on the quotations that receive. It also depends on the complexity of the request for tender that needs to be developed in consultation with the council. It might go, there might be workshops that develop a level of complexity that require the request for tender documentation to be a lot more complex than what we initially envisage.
Thank you. Ultimately what my question really gets to is the tender itself will cost over $100,000. But the actual review would I be correct in assuming the actual review would subsequently cost orders of magnitude more than simply the quotes to go out to tender?
Director.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, we're hoping that the request if we appoint someone to develop the request for tender for us, their expertise and knowledge will be able to assist us in determining how much the organisational review may cost itself, and also determine what sort of resources need to be put from within the organisation to assist in that review as well. So it's not going to be insignificant. The last time that the council looked at this, I think as a result of a notice of motion, it was estimated that this was in 2018, I think, estimated at a minimum $400,000 to undertake the review. So I expect it will be more than that.
Thank you. For you, Mr. Mayor, is it possible to flag an alternate to this motion for the council meeting? And that is that we proceed with option three, not to progress with an organisational review, and as an alternative examine other continuous improvement mechanisms already in place.
Director?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, yes, we can do that. We can produce that alternative. It probably would provide us with some clarity as to other mechanisms that you were envisaging with regard to that improvement. But that can be part of your motion and comment.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor, just mechanisms I mentioned were the ones detailed in the report that are already in place. Thank you.
I'll leave you to liaise. Thank you. Further questions? Item 12.9, list of payments made during the month of April. Any questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. I would just like the director to confirm the email which I sent through this afternoon and that I can get some responses in the pack for those payments.
Director Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you. Yes, we have received the email and all the questions will be answered in the pack.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Kingston. Any further questions on this item? Item 12.10, financial activity statement for April 2024. Any questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Yes, thank you. I'm just turning over to the correct page in the briefing notes. yes, could I get some further clarification on page 492? Relating to the favourable timing variance that mainly resulted in the lower estimate consultancy of about $852,000. Just understanding how that's a timing variance, and could I also get some more understanding of the favourable timing for external contractors and services of $775,000?
Director Humphrey.
Yes, through you, Mr. Mayor, we'll provide further information in the packs. But in short, the timing variance arises when projects are behind schedule and what we've put in the year-to-date budget figures hasn't been achieved, so the year-to-date actuals are lower than we'd anticipated. I would encourage councillors not to look at that as a permanent saving. It is something that will likely reduce as the year goes on.
Councillor?
Yes. Could I just have an understanding of those projects which might have come to be behind schedule, but further on page 493, the unfair favourable variance caused by computer software subscriptions of $251,000. Just a bit more of an understanding because we've been looking at that more in detail at audit and risk.
Director.
Through Mr. Mayor, the unfavourable variance there is that Project Axiom is running ahead of schedule, which has required the city to purchase more Microsoft Dynamics licences than we'd anticipated. Over the course of the project, though, we are still on budget. It is purely a timing issue.
Councillor?
Thank you. And then just lastly, understanding the variance on page 495 in relation to the black spot projects. There's a variance of $236,000 there, and then streetscape enhancement program, a variation of $332,000. Is that delays in projects or just trying to seek some further understanding on this?
Director.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, my understanding is that, yes, it's delays in projects, but I'll provide detailed answers in the packs.
Yep. And just last one. I'm sorry. I did the same thing everyone's been doing tonight.
Councillor.
Yes, this is actually the last one, and this one will probably best be on notice. The employee costs, I'm just looking at the variances here, and, of course, we've recently had some decisions made in relation to the EBA, which I won't speak about. They're just the ongoing bargaining and discussion process about payments. I'm just trying to understand when and how that's going to affect the year-to-date budget before the end of the financial year. So the payments which were agreed on.
Director Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I would agree with Councillor Kingston. I'll take that question. I notice provide detailed information packs.
Thank you. Further questions? Item 12.11, card transactions for the month of April. Any questions on this item? 12.12, the tender for plumbing maintenance services and minor plumbing works to a value of less than $100,000. Any questions on this item? Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you to the director, we're looking here at a saving of $24,000 on a $3 million project. I guess I need to ask the director whether he's comfortable in accepting a lower qualitative ranking just to save $27,000, $24,000, correct?
Director. Back to you, Mr. Mayor. They're well above the qualitative cut-off that we would have for this kind of tender. So, yes, I'm quite comfortable they'll be more than able to do the job.
Good question. Thank you, Councillor Chester. Further questions? Item 12.13, proposed revocation of management order for reserve in Bramston Park. Any questions on this item? Councillor Hutton.
Just a brief couple of questions. Just to get a proper understanding, if we revoke the order in the interim period whilst we're waiting on the new order, what is the effect on, I guess, the city's use of the park?
Director Classen.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The decision is for Council to support the revocation, and we'll work with the department to then turn that around in terms of the new management order in place so that we don't have a time where we cannot use the park. That's not going to be any member.
Councillor?
Yeah, and just a second question. I'm just curious of whether or not there is any financial transaction that happens when a school uses the park and whether or not the changing of the order will affect the magnitude of the fee charged.
Director Classen.
Free Mr. Mayor, we have shared use agreements in place with those schools where we have the power to license in the management order, which is not the case in Bramston Park, therefore the change. Currently, the higher arrangement equates to a similar cost that we would charge through the license, which is on average about 25% of the turf maintenance cost of the park. So financially, there's going to be no difference. It's just going to make it administratively much easier. There's a shared use agreement in place instead of an ongoing hire arrangement, which is much harder to manage.
Councillor?
Previously, the local residents association has sought to install equipment in the suburb of Burns Beach. I'm wondering if this agreement was reached, whether or not through the school and the PNC they would actually have the power to install permanent fixtures on the oval or surrounding grass areas.
Director?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I'm not aware of that request. I will take that on notice. I wouldn't think so, but I'll take it on notice and provide it in the pack, Councillor Hutton.
Further questions? Item 12.14, outcomes of community consultation, urban bike trails project, proposed new facilities. Any questions on this item? Councillor Pizzi.
Just the one. In the instance that this proposal is agreed to by Council, will the City consider creating working groups with the community members to suggest what they would like to see the mountain bike tracks look like?
Director Classen.
Sure, Mr. Mayor, the proposal at this stage is to, as per our normal process, seeking community feedback on the support for this. The concept designs has been provided as part of the consultation material. There's not proposed to form further groups or steering groups or community groups to assist with the design. When we get to the point where the final design will go through the notification of work process like it would normally do through projects of this nature.
Councillor Pizzi.
Sorry, so just to confirm, if it was to go ahead and Council gave you the go-ahead, then you will make up designs and then it will come back to Council after community consultation, or it will come back to Council and then kind of seek community consultation through that way?
Director?
Free Mr. Mayor, no. To respond to that question, the community consultation is this process that we're currently engaging. The design will be undertaken and then notified to the ward councils as we would normally do through the process, the notification process.
Councillor?
I have a number of residents getting in contact with me both ways, not excited about the project, but excited. But the ones who are excited about the project have lots of input that they want to get to the city and tell you what they would really love to see there. How would they go about giving you that input?
Director.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I'm very comfortable for those residents if you refer them to provide that input directly into the city, and we will consider that during the design process.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. It's just in relation to types of nodes that are proposed to be constructed. One of the discussions we've always had on this is when it was originally conceived was mountain bike nodes, and then the majority of the nodes proposed at this first stage of this appear mostly to be pump tracks or BMX tracks. So going forward through this, are we proposing, if there's another stage of this, to be mountain bike tracks, or how are we considering that in this process, given that was the original consideration from the people who put in the petition?
Well, I would note that pump tracks are mountain bike tracks, but Director Klassen?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the consideration of the future projects will be undertaken as part of the budget development process, where elected members will have input into the types of facilities that will be provided. Just on that, my staff on an unrelated project today met with one of the designers that's appointed for another facility, and they pretty much confirmed that these facilities are multi-nodal facilities, so that it's not just for BMX or not just for mountain bikes. We provide a type of facility that can be used by more than one specific type of user, and I think that's the aim of most of these initial notes that's been rolled out.
Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. I think I might try and follow up with the director during the week just to ensure that the nodes have the right amount of difficulty that I think that may have been considered in the original concept, but I appreciate the advice time. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Councillor Hutton.
Apologies in advance. This is probably quite a historical question. I'm wondering how the location and spread of the parks identified were reached, particularly in mind where they seem to be mostly geographically in the southern part of the city. So just a bit of history lesson, if possible.
Director Klassen.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I'll provide some information. Might ask Councillor Lee, Director Lee, to add some comments.
Promoted.
If I get it wrong.
Director.
I don't know if I promoted him. In terms of the, so there was originally a petition for the development of the urban bike trails. That was followed up by council supporting the development of a business case for specifically the development of urban bike trails in a number of suburbs. And I'm just trying to find that in the report. Padbury, Kallaroo, Craigie and Mullaloo, and that's how the project was originated. It doesn't mean that somewhat in the future, as part of the budget development process, that can be expanded, but that was the original intent of the project. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Further questions? Item 12.15, petition in relation to the maintenance, repair and upgrade of Elkhart Dog Park. Any questions on this item? Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor. I had two questions that were designed to just address something that was mentioned in the deputation from Ms. O'Byrne, and I had the wording written down, which may not be 100% accurate, something like residents had contacted ward councillors and were getting nowhere. So I take that to mean during the last term of council prior to the petition, yes, being submitted. So my question is to Director Klassen, I think. So, as is normal with North Ward councils, during the last term of council, myself and previous councillor McLean always decided which one was going to take the lead, and in this instance it was former councillor McLean. So he was contacted in September 22 by Mr. Stuart Henderson. So my question to the director is whether the director can confirm, and it may have to do that on notice, that there was a sequence of correspondence through the councillor request between Councillor McLean, or former Councillor McLean, and Mr. Stuart Henderson, with questions directed to the director and responses coming back from the 22nd of September. And secondly, whether it would be helpful if those questions and answers could be placed in the pack so that all elected members can see that. Thank you.
Director.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I can't recall exactly the names of the people that corresponded with elected members. I know there were correspondents who provided a response to that. I'll take it on notice and provide the details in the pack, and happy to provide those emails that I've provided to elected members for all councillors.
Deputy Mayor?
Yes, thank you. My first question was related purely to correspondence with Mr. Stuart Henderson. My second question is also on notice. Can the director confirm that there was no further queries from any resident during the last term of council that raised any queries through Council McLean to the directors? I believe it was just one resident. Thank you.
Director?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I will have to take that on notice and provide the details in the back.
Thank you. Councillor Jessa?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Seeing that the city is prepared to expand the dog park, I'm just wondering if the director could comment on whether any or at least some of the issues raised by Mrs. O'Byrne will be ameliorated or solved by this initiative.
Director.
Free Mr. Mayor, the main impact on the dog exercise areas is the impact on the turf, and as indicated in the report, the major cost component for maintaining the dog parks is actually to turf. We've also drawn comparisons with other local governments, and you can see the very quick deterioration of the turf, especially where in the larger dock areas, and that's where the most of our expenditure has been up to date. The proposal and subject to approval of the budget by council at its June council meeting is to extend that area and then address that to improve the general amenity and appearance of the site and make it more usable for those members of the public that uses that. So, yes, and some of those things will be addressed through that process. Councillor Chester.
Thank you for that.
Further questions? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. Just first, the director, about the turf costs. One of the concerns I have about point two of the recommendation is that if we just increase the area of the dog park, it seems to me it's going to have a corresponding increase in the maintenance. So is that estimated now to be about $80,000 a year for this area of turf in the city?
Director.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the cost to extend the dog park is estimated at $80,000. That is the capital cost. We've estimated the increased annual maintenance cost will be about $20,000 per year for that increase in the area that we have to maintain.
But as far as the total maintenance cost, this last financial year it was around $60,000. So is that looking to now be about $80,000 a year just in maintenance costs for this turf area?
Director?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. We've used the average over the last couple of years in terms of the increase in costs, so it's not necessarily an additional $20,000 on the 57. It's more an additional $20,000 on about $40,000, $45,000. So it's still an expensive park to maintain. If that's something that council wants to provide to residents, that's the expected maintenance cost we will have in trying to maintain an area that presents half decent in terms of the turf. I mean, there are other options if you want to reduce the turf, but that's the expectations from the users of that facilities that will have at least a large turf area.
Councillor?
Thank you. Has the administration considered alternative coverings for the area instead of turf? Is that something maybe that could be taken on notice, such as if this was changed to mostly mulch, gravel, sealed surfaces of some sort? It's just $80,000 or more a year. It just seems expensive. Is there any other alternatives that have been considered on this?
I think Director just said there were, but Director?
Through Mr. Mayor, as I've indicated, the expectations is for turf. What we can do is, if council supports the budget, that we actually look at reducing and maybe trialling some other surfaces in the area. I think the main issue with any other surface and any dog owner would most probably provide that information to the city. It gets hot very quickly, and therefore it makes it very unusable, especially in the hot summer months. So those are the type of things we need to look at. Obviously, it's well shaded. There might be opportunities. That's maybe something we can explore through the capital project next year.
And Councillor? Yes, following on other concerns with the dog park. As far as dog attacks, is that related to the size of the area, or is that more related to having an enclosed area that the residents are less careful about their dog's activity? And do we have the numbers for dog attacks in the dog park?
Director.
Through Mr. Mayor, I think we do have the number of incidents in Alkar Dog Park, and I can provide that or get Director Lee's directorate to assist me in providing that information. I think what we've heard from one of the experts at the last SCRG, and I can't recall if it was in a workshop outside that or at the SCRG, with the provision of a dog park or a fenced dog exercise area, you create the expectation and the excitement for a lot of dogs, and they suddenly want to run around, which they wouldn't usually do in a different environment, and that adds to the potential conflict in that area. And that's why a larger location or larger park would most probably reduce that. But those are the type of things that, as part of the dog management plan that we are currently developing, is something that we will need to look at. What's the impact of that? And I would suggest that we get information through that back before we finalise the design for the extension to the dog park.
Councillor? Thank you. And then as far as in the dog park itself, there's been some discussions about infrastructure. Is there any dog-specific infrastructure, agility equipment? So the deputation focused on seizing because of urination. But is there any considerations of dog agility equipment, or is there any currently in the
director?
Again, Mr. Mayor, I'll have to take that on notice. Again, that's most probably something that will be considered as part of the dog park developments in future. I don't think there's currently anything in Alkar Park, no.
Councillor? Thank you. And then just lastly on notice, could I just get the director, when considering the other elements on notice, just to maybe lay out maybe ways we can look at alternative ways of landscaping a dog park? As I said before, mulch, different options. Whether having agility equipment or other infrastructure for residents, but it seems to be the main issue is the containment of the fence, even as far as removing the fence from the dog park itself, whether that's something that might facilitate the turf maintenance costs.
Mr. Mayor, if I may just seek some clarity on that last question, Councillor Kingston.
I'll section that out. So you're asking for an amendment to explore dog activity infrastructure and different landscaping options to minimise maintenance. So very straightforward as amendments. So if I capture, did I capture those two correctly?
It was more about advice first.
The fence bit, you lost us a bit there, Councillor.
Oh, sorry. No, it was just advice from the director about improvements to it. And as I said, even advice on if we remove the fence, keeping dog facilities in that particular park, is that a way that that might address some of these issues?
So make it a non-fenced dog park?
Yeah.
So a regular park?
No, it'd still be a dog park.
Whatever.
I'm just saying if it had different equipment in it, agility equipment, but things for dogs, but it seems to be the limitation with the fence is causing the issue. I wouldn't put it that way, saying it's not a dog park.
No, I said, an unfenced dog park is every park in the city unless it's a dog prohibited area.
That would be one way of looking at it, but I'm saying
that
if
would
you
be
had
an accurate statement.
That'd
so
be,
I,
but if you had,
so I'm asking
agility equipment and so on, and that, then it would have the characteristics for being for dogs, but not necessarily. I think what I'm saying makes sense. It's not suggesting that we would necessarily not have a dog park. It would just say it just wouldn't be a fenced one, but it might have facilities, agility equipment, seating, other ways to provide for dog owners.
Director Claflin.
Free Mr. Mayor, from memory, when we started with the development of the dog parks, there was a clear indication that there is a preference for fenced dog exercise areas. The main provision for that is most probably the inability of dog owners, noting that they have to have their dogs under effective control within the fenced dog exercise area as well. But it's their inability to effectively control those dogs, which actually then causes the issue because they run around and actually is not under effective control. I think changing away from a fenced dog exercise area, are you going to lose that, which was the original aim for actually providing that fenced dog exercise area. And I still think that is a valid point. And perhaps that, therefore, it's quite important that potentially any changes that we might like to see to the dog exercise areas, we wait for that through the dog management plan. And how do we do that? Do we provide additional dog exercise areas? Should they be fenced? Should they not be fenced? I most probably would suggest, Mr. Mayor, that those questions are best answered through that process. And noting that we have provided a budget next year, and I'm comfortable that we delay the implementation of that until after we actually settled on how that dog management within the city should look into the future.
Well, I'll just take that as a general comment, Director. I don't read the recommendation as recommending that. And, I don't think. Anyway, I won't express my opinion on that just now. But yeah, Councillor Hutt.
Thank you. A few quick questions. Firstly, is the city of the opinion that there is currently an issue with the contractor maintenance of the park? And following on from that, when is the current contract up for renewal?
Director.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I'll have to take the question on notice in terms of when the current contract is up for renewal. I have not been made aware of any issues that the city staff is currently experiencing with the contractor. I have looked at the emails that we provided to the person that did one of the deputations today in August last year, when there's a photo of a hole in the facility, the contractor, and as we've corresponded to that, the contractor at that time, actually ahead of that happening, informed the city that they had issues and they weren't able to attend to the site. They came in, I think, I can't remember if it was the third Tuesday or the Friday, I just quickly have a look at the emails to just refresh my memory. They came in at the next scheduled section, and by the early next week it was completed and all the holes were filled and it was inspected the next week. So at the time that was brought to the attention, but as I said, the contractor indicated to us prior to that they had a problem, which is actually quite plausible from the contract. But I haven't been notified by the staff there are any other issues with the contract.
Councillor?
Yeah, just following on from that question, I know there was a lot of, I guess, there's a large push in the community or discussion about issues with the dog park, and around September, October last year, ahead of the council elections. I'm wondering if there was a spike during that period of, I guess, feedback to council about maintenance issues and whether those reports of maintenance issues have continued. And again, that's just following on from your previous comment.
Director?
Through Mr. Mayor, I'm aware of some of the concerns that were raised end of August when the contractor wasn't available. I am not aware of anything else, but I'll take it on notice and check if there was anything else that was raised at the time as well.
Yeah, no, thank you. Just on a different line of questioning, I'm wondering, do we anticipate any seasonal factors to do with the maintenance of the park, i.e. are there peak demand periods for using the facility?
Director?
Through Mr. Mayor, I mean, it seems like seasonal demands does not really exist. It seems like it is a very popular park, and it's been very popular since the day it opened. Because it's fenced and people actually can let their dogs run around a bit. And in terms of the obviously, as we're moving forward, we learn from experience in terms of the issues with drainage and those type of things. So, yes, would you do it slightly different this time around? Most probably you would. You look at those impacts and the areas where we're actually having some serious concerns and maintenance issues. The size of the park is the major concern, because there's just not enough space, and therefore the turf does not get time to recover. And the problem is, once it actually deteriorated, it's almost impossible for you, Mr. Mayor, to actually get that back up to standard again, unless you are able to close the park for a long period of time, which is not feasible because people are expecting to use it.
Thank you. And just on those seasonal factors, I know that was mostly there focused on, and my question was as well focused on, I guess, the demand of the facility. But in terms of the actual wear and tear, as in the impact on the ground, the effect of moisture, those types of things, and even the ability of the surface to recover, is there pinch points there? Do we see more issues in the winter when it's wet and the grass isn't growing as well? Do we see more issues in the summer? Is there actually is there a seasonal component to the wear and tear, excluding the actual usage of the facility?
Director.
Free, Mr. Mayor. I will take that question on notice, and I shall be getting beyond my understanding of the day-to-day operations of that facility. Yes, there are different challenges, different times of the year, but I will provide a bit of information regarding that in the back.
Yep. You've sort of already covered this, but just to be crystal clear with the question, is there a correlation between the maintenance cost of the site and the popularity of the site? As in, would it be suitable to say that the actual popularity of the site is actually what's causing some of the issues, and particularly the cost of maintenance?
Director.
Three of us, Mr. Mayor. One can assume that if there were no dogs in the park, I wouldn't have had any issues with the turf. So, yes, the number of dogs and the number of users within the park definitely has an impact on the maintenance cost. As I've indicated, if you look at the cost there, the turf renovations is most probably the key additional cost that one would not expect to have if it's a larger or a much larger area.
And just my final question on this.
I'll hold you to that.
We've spoke a lot this evening, there's been lots of questions around about the additional cost of expanding the facility and the maintenance and the current costs and the like. I'm wondering if we're actually missing, or if there's potential cost savings elsewhere by focusing users on this park. For example, are we potentially saving wear and tear in other parks because dogs are now using this one facility? Do we have the potential to save on costs for dog bags and littering and pickup and those types of things because we're concentrating? Basically, by providing specialised and centralised dog facilities, is there actually the potential to make other cost savings elsewhere through the targeted nature of the facility?
Director.
Free, Mr. Mayor. I think it would be very difficult to determine and or assess that. I mean, there was no reduction in maintenance costs in other areas when the park opened. I think it's the concentration of a lot of animals in a specific area where you just don't see any of that in the larger areas.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor May.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll be very brief. I recall a number of years ago when the city went out and did a consultation or survey on potential locations for the dog park, and that led us to Elkhart Park ultimately being chosen. But I also recall there were funds set aside for a second dog park. Can I confirm whether that's correct?
Director.
Through Mr. Mayor, at the time there was the identification of a second dog exercise area, which was listed in the Capital Works program. However, through the development process, through feedback from specifically the ward councillors at the time, that project did not progress at the time.
Thank you. So my assumption would be that the funds that were potentially allocated to that project were spent on other approved capital works projects.
Director.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the project just did not proceed, so the funds were not spent at the time.
Thank you. Final question. In addition to the dog park, can the city provide some, compare how much the city spends on recreation and facilities for dogs versus for cats?
Director.
Through Mr. Mayor, yes, we can. I'm not aware of any facilities we provide for cats, apart from the report we did to the last council meeting, but those weren't recreational. The dog specific dog exercise area is this facility.
Thank you. No need to take that one on notice.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. Just noting the level of detail in some of the questions here, I just would like to ask the Director to remind us all of the outstanding report that's due to us on animal exercises. It might be specific to dogs, but there is a report coming to Council. I just appreciate being reminded of the schedule and scope of that report. Thank you.
Oh, I think, is that Director Parry or yourself? Director Parry? No, Director Classen?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the Council might recall that there was a petition regarding extension of dog exercise areas. This was a requirement that we said we'll incorporate that into the development of a dog management plan. The development of dog management plan for the SCRG was brought forward through the SCRG work plan, and that SCRG meeting was held, I think it was the last Monday in May, when we actually had the SCRG and a specific consultant appointed to look at that. In terms of the program from here onwards, we've got that, but I don't have it to hand tonight. I will provide that in effect for yourself, Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. If no further questions, we'll proceed to item 15, urgent business, which will be dealt with at the ordinary council meeting on the 25th of June. Item 16, motions of which previous... Oh, sorry, I've skipped ahead. Reports of committee, number 13. Mr. CEO.
Thank you, Mayor. There are no reports of committees at this stage.
Thank you. Item 14, reports of the CEO. Mr. CEO.
Thank you, Mayor. The following additional reports will be listed in the Council agenda. A proposal for levying differential rates for the 2024-25 financial year and the draft 2024-2025 budget.
Thank you. Urgent business, as I said, dealt with at the ordinary Council meeting and unlikely. Motions of which previous notice has been given. We have a notice of motion from Councillor Pizzi, which is there in the report. Mr. CEO or Director Parry, do we have any other notices of motion at this stage? No. Item 17, announcements of notices of motion for the next meeting. Any elected members who wish to flag their intent to raise a notice of motion at the next council meeting, probably do so then. That brings us to item 18, closure, and I hereby close the briefing session at 8:57 p.m. Thank you all.